The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to comedian Kevin Bartini. He works in TV, but in a way you probably haven't seen him. He's been the audience warm-up comic at The Colbert Report with Stephen Colbert, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and is currently getting the crowd ready for The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore. Stick around, and, you know, maybe you'd be more ready for today's show if I brought him out first. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of comedians who would like to personally warm up, at least half of you, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. There's nothing worse than a cold, cold room in late-night television. I said cold the first time because the air conditioning in TV show studios is set notoriously low to keep everyone alert. Now, I said cold the second time because the audience usually comes in mentally cold. They've been standing outside on the street, usually for hours, waiting to get in to see a favorite show. But by the time they finally get admitted and take a seat, they're hungry, they're tired, and probably in need of a restroom. Their abundant goodwill for the star of the show is likely exhausted. What they need is a warm-up. What they need more specifically is comedian Kevin Bartini. Bartini has warmed up audiences for everything from The Colbert Report with Stephen Colbert and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He's currently getting crowds ready for Comedy Central's latest smash, The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore. Of course, no one outside of the studio gets to see Bartini do his thing. So you might want to check out his latest comedy album, The Unintentionally White Album, or his podcast, The Movie Preview Review. You can also check out his website, kevinbartini.com, to see where he'll be appearing for the rest of us. Or you can watch and listen to today's Mr. Media. Kevin Bartini, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate being on your show.
My pleasure. Good to have you here. I'm thinking that being the warm-up guy for any top-rated late-night talk show sounds like a great gig, except for the part where nobody but the lucky ticket holders can actually get to see you work.
Yeah, that's... But still, it's a pretty great gig. I love doing it. It's for a comedian, especially. It's a great gig because it's something I can do in the evenings, which means I don't have to wake up early, and B, I get to go do it, and then I can then go off and do spots in comedy clubs in the city after, or not. You know, I can just go home by like 8 o'clock, have dinner with my wife and watch some TV, yet still feel like I actually did comedy that day. So it's a best of both worlds thing. Hopefully down the road it'll lead to some on camera work, but no, I love this job. I'm very fortunate to have it.
I'm hoping your wife finds you entertaining for those nights that you decide to come home and have dinner with her.
Yeah, she's hot and cold on me and the entertainment value.
Tell me more about the hot. Never mind. Kevin, how do you get started with a gig like this? How did you get your first one?
Well, before I got my first gig, I had been doing stand-up for about 10 years, and I had done some improv training with the Upright Citizens Brigade, and I'd hosted a lot of shows, because that's when you start out as a young comic. You start out as a host, and I modeled the way I hosted on the way Letterman and Conan hosted, and specifically the way they opened a show, which is they come out and even though the audience is applauding, the audience is got their tickets and is there and is invested in the night. If you notice, Letterman and Conan, these guys all start out, boy, we have a great show. They start out hyping the people. We got a great show. You know, Bradley Cooper's here tonight. And then such as, you know, like, I was like, wow, they really, their first step is getting people hyped and excited and then going into the comedy. And so I started off doing that kind of stuff. And the reason I'm telling you that is because eventually what happened was other comics started to see the way I was doing, and I became very popular as a host. And there are a number of guys at The Daily Show who are writers, producers of the show, who are also at least dabble in stand-up and who I had met through those circuits. So one of the guys who was one of the warm-up guys over there at one point offered to have me come in to do Millionaire as his backup. So I did that for a little while. And then the job at Colbert at The Daily Show as one of the backup guys to back the warm-up guy up, like substitute. It opened up, and they were having trouble. John wasn't liking the people who were coming in, and somebody at one of the meetings just threw my name out there and said, oh, you should check this guy out, and it was quickly seconded by another guy who knew me through stand-up. So I get the call, and the way it worked was basically you there's no way of auditioning for the show without doing the show. So they booked me for one afternoon to come in and warm up the audience once. And I was just told straight out by the producer, who was a friend, he said, look, I think you're very funny and I like you. A lot of people on the staff like you. The only guy who matters is Jon Stewart, and he hasn't seen you yet. So he's going to be he'll be watching you from the wings. You bring him out, and he does the show. And if he likes you, you're hired. And if he doesn't, nice knowing you, you know? So fortunately, he liked me. But that's kind of the long answer to your short question.
That's all right. So for somebody who you know, doesn't really work in this field, why does it matter if you're good, if Jon Stewart likes you as the opening? I mean, the only thing the people at home are going to see is the show itself. They're not going to see you. Right. Why does it matter that the warm-up guy be any good at what he does?
Well, it actually matters a lot, and the reason is this. Especially when you're talking about a comedy show, you know, they tape the show. Let's say Jon Stewart tapes at 6 o'clock and Larry tapes at about 7. Well, their staffs get in at, you know, their writers check in at about 9 a.m. and have been writing all day, have been watching Fox News and crap all day all night. And writing and rewriting and editing and rehearsing and writing some more. And they really only get one chance to put that joke out there. And if it works, the show is great. And if it falls flat because the audience is disinterested, then when you're watching it at home, you're like, this show's not that great, and you lose interest. And so it's very important that they have somebody go out before who can not only get the audience laughing, but can kind of focus the audience's energy. Because it's like you said, sometimes the audience every day the audience has already been there for a couple of hours before the taping, between showing up to get your tickets, standing in line, going through security, and then waiting. So sometimes you have to actually get them back up and get them excited and kind of like, you know, cheerlead a little bit. And then there's other times where specifically – like when The Daily Show goes on the road during conventions or during Colbert in his last month, where the audience knew they were there for something special. I mean, when The Daily Show doesn't tour much, so when they come to Tampa or Charlotte, It's like Led Zeppelin rolls into town. It's huge, and the people are camping out overnight trying to get standby tickets. And when you were there, knowing it's one of the last Colberts, and you know, and for those two shows, people get their tickets in a lottery system, and they may get the tickets for 6 months down the road, and then plan their vacation around it. Every night, you're meeting people who come from California or Europe because this is when the Daily Show said they could come. I mean, I can't undersell how excited people are to go to tapings of these shows. And so sometimes my job is just to channel that energy, to focus the energy on the show, because otherwise it's like it's kinetic. They're all over. I mean, if you had ever been in the Colbert studio, everywhere you looked around, there were things. There was this huge papier-mâché head of Stephen that you never saw on camera, but it was there during the rally. And there's all this fan art and stuff. So there's always somewhere you're looking, and there's always something. So my job was just to focus, to get them in, to get them understanding what we need of them, and therefore make a great audience.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you. What kind of things can you talk about, and what's off the menu for the warm-up guy?
I guess you could talk about anything. I don't do stand-up when I'm warming them up. I do crowd work, so it's always off the top of my head. It's just reacting to you, whatever, who you're with, asking you questions. My general rule, and I've never been told by a producer of any of Jon Stewart's three shows, for his company shows, never has a producer told me you're not allowed to say anything. I can curse. I can just talk freely. They've never said content, but my own sense is I would never ever talk about current events or politics because that's their gig. I like to say, you know, if I was opening for Kenny Rogers, I wouldn't sing The Gambler. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to step on their toes. So I just keep it to crowd work. Every day I do the same, probably first 5 to 7 minutes is kind of the same. That's kind of what I think of as like a flight attendant at the beginning of the flight. There are certain things that I have to say for the producers that they need the audience to know and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of those kind of things I've already kind of said to you to set the table. And then I found a way to get a punchline into almost everything I say in there to get them laughing. And then I just get into the crowd work and go with it from there.
So if you weren't doing a warm-up for these shows, you could be a flight attendant on Southwest.
Were it not for my fear of airlines, yeah.
You're going to have to get over that if you're going to be a...
No, I'm kidding. I'm not afraid.
Oh, okay.
Or just serving other people.
Okay. Erase that issue very quickly. Well done.
The vomit bags is probably what would turn me off. Not the idea of crashing into the ocean, just having to pick up somebody else's vomit bag. That would be the end of it for me.
Okay, between the vomit and crashing into the ocean, now I don't want to fly. Thanks a
right?
lot, pal.
Oh.
Thanks very much.
Sure.
All right, so what are the pros and cons of this gig? I mean, generally I would look at it and go, okay, you're going to be seen by a lot of people. Periodically, these shows – I mean, most of these shows have at least one Hollywood person on as a guest each night, so maybe you're seen or heard by someone. But from your perspective, what's the good, what's the bad?
Well, the good, as far as the job that I have and the shows that I do, the good is that I'm working for shows that I'm a fan of. I was a fan of The Daily Show since it came out in the late 90s. I think it came out in 97 when I was this high school senior. So, like, they've had me in their target audience the whole time, and I was a fan of it. So just to go to work and to be around people who I'm a fan of is wonderful. The bad would be when you have to do a show like, you know, like the Wendy Williams show or something like that, you know, where you couldn't pay me to sit and watch it. I've had to do a couple shows like that, not Wendy, which is why I always say that one, because I've never done it, so I'm not insulting anyone I've worked with. But I've done shows, I've done one-offs for shows and stuff where I've had to – one time I spent 8 hours – doing warm up for a show that I would never watch for 5 minutes. That's kind of lousy.
Fox and Friends?
No.
What was it? Come on.
It was a show The show actually wasn't terrible. It's called What Not to Wear. It's a makeover show, and they did a live. They never have a live audience, but it was some anniversary show, so they did a live audience, and they didn't know what they were doing. And I mean, they had the audience in, and it took so long. They had me warming them up and then entertaining them during commercials and during breaks. But to do a makeover show, they had to do this woman's hair and makeup over. That was like an hour, just in the middle of the day, that there was nothing going on but me. And I was doing crowd work and talking, and the audience was only about 85 people to begin with. So you get through everybody. that was not a lot of fun. But nobody – like I don't really think that any of the A-list celebrities or anything really see me when I'm doing my work. They're in their green rooms, and I don't know. I know that there are cameras on me. I know that the audio is open, and I know that the writers upstairs are watching me. But I don't know if also that means that in the TVs, in the monitors, in the green rooms, they hear me or not. I don't know. I do know that the writers tune in because for them, it's their break time, and they watch me as a part of their break, which I think is kind of cool.
That's kind of neat.
You know, their scripts have been turned in for the day. Now they have to wait for the end of the show to notes and so I know they hear, but I don't know if anybody else does.
Well, I know. I don't know if you've. If he may have left before your time there, Rob Cuttner, who thinks with Conan now, and he was with the Daily Show for a long time before that. He's been on here three times,
cool.
I'm guessing that guys like that, you know, as they broaden their careers, they probably take the memory of a guy like you with them, and you're probably counting on that, probably.
Yeah, to an extent, absolutely. I mean, a lot of this business is relationships and who you know and who's a fan of yours or who likes to work with you. Like for example, when I do get a one-off, like What Not to Wear, or I did a show called Bunk, which was on IFC for a season. And those shows came because, you know, a producer on that show either had worked at the Daily Show or had worked with somebody at the Daily Show. And when it came time for them to get a producer or to get a warm-up guy, you know, they're not going to put an ad in backstage. They're just going to call a producer over at the Daily Show who they know and say, you know, who do you have on staff that you could recommend? And so it's a lot of that. And I'm definitely with the nightly show. I'm noticing with the writers that a lot of them really do go out of their way to come down and talk to me. And I'm having as many of them as guests on my podcast coming up, and I'm nurturing that relationship as well. So yeah, hopefully we'll see where this leads down the road. But yeah, between the writers and the correspondents on the show, Mike Yard and I go back, and Ricky Velez as well, go back in the year in stand up. Mike and I have known each other for, I don't know, 12, 13 years, and Ricky about 6 or 7. So there's definite relationships building for sure.
And how is it different? And now, did you join the nightly show from the beginning, or have you?
Yeah, basically. So, what happened was they had another comedian who they had hired, and he's a stand-up. He's a very good stand-up. I won't tell you his name, but he's a very good stand-up. But just because you're a good stand-up doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be a good warm-up. It's a totally different thing. And if I were ever to cast for a warm-up comic, I would go to the UCB. I wouldn't go to Caroline's looking for somebody. And so they'd hired him as their full-time guy. And I found that out about a month ahead. So I was a little bummed out, but I kind of figured I was going to be in rotation maybe as the second string, you know, the backup there, which is great. That's still some money every month, and it's associated with the show. And I was like, oh, this guy's a successful comic. He's not going to be there forever. That job will eventually be mine. And he is a successful comedian, and to the point that he many Thursdays would have to be gone to go off to some improv or something like that. So what happened was we had test shows the Wednesday and the Thursday before the first week, and he couldn't be there on the Thursday. So they had called me in as his backup for that a couple days ahead. So I was already excited. The show hasn't even aired, and I'm already I'm already their backup guy. And I get there on Thursday, and I find out that it didn't go well the night before, that the warm up didn't work out, and it was a bad test show as a result. And they were telling me this, just like, hey, you really do a good job here. And it's a parlor trick. I look at it like it's a skill. It's something you learn, and once you learn how to do it, you can be successful doing it again and again. So I went out and I crushed, and they brought me back that opening, the first show. They brought in, they basically decided after that they weren't going to use that comic. So it was down to me, and then they had the main guy at the Daily Show come in on the first show and tested him out, and they liked me better. So from the second show on, it's been only me.
Wow. And no one ever heard of Billy Crystal ever again.
Yeah, right?
You know, earlier you mentioned, I wasn't aware of this, you mentioned that you had done work with UCB, mm-hmm. Upright Citizens Brigade. When did you work with them, and who was in – this is – I'm going to ask, this is going to sound like the Mark Maron question, but who were your guys? Who was there at the time you were there? Anyone we would know?
Let me see. When I did my very first level one, that was probably about 12 years ago, and then I didn't have the money to do level two, level three, level four at the time, but it gave me my very first basic understanding of how improv works, and just the idea of yes and working at the top of your intelligence and just trying things. I don't remember who taught me. I do remember that I was picked for some team for a short while with Jack McBrayer. So who was
Kenneth the Page?
Kenneth the Page, and has now got a new show on Adult Swim with Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog. So I had him, and then about 3 or 4 years ago, once I did have money, I started going back, and I started all over again. And then I had Ari Vukaitis was one of my teachers, and Molly Lloyd was another, and my apologies to the other two. I'm just terrible with names.
I'm Bob.
But nobody. I wasn't in there early enough to be able to say I had Amy or any of the original core people teaching me.
Well, just to clarify that, Amy being Amy Poehler, who was, as I recall, one of the founders of UCB.
Yeah, I should have said that. Did I just make it sound like we're dating or something? I don't we've never even met. But
I think she's available. I think she's still on the market. So, all right. And the other thing I want to ask you about the warm-up guys, I mean, has anyone made a leap from doing warm-ups into, greater visibility? Anyone that we would recognize?
Yeah, what's his name? Who used to host the Family Feud, the dude who killed himself. Ray Combs?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was discovered as a warm-up guy, and he got that hosting gig on the game show as a direct result. There are definitely guys who've moved on or who do it and who pop up. If you watch CNN, there's a guy named Pete Dominic on there. Mm-hmm. Pete was one of the he was the original warm-up guy at Colbert. So I kind of, once he moved on to television, I replaced him. After one or two others, I guess, in between that didn't work out. I'm trying to think. There's a number of guys who and then there's the guys who have just done it. And there's guys like Eddie Brill, who did it with Letterman for like 15 years and then, did probably a dozen sets on Letterman. And I know Conan uses his warm-up guy a bunch. And, it's definitely a step in, absolutely, into the industry and into bigger and better things.
All right, and let me give you a softball question.
Sure.
Who's funnier, Colbert, Stewart, or Wilmore?
Oh my God! Well, that is a softball. I don't know if I can answer that. I don't know. They're all funny in their own different ways. I think I can tell you this: of the three guys who are all super nice, easy to work for guys, Stephen Colbert is the kindest, just of all people I know. He's just the most down-to-earth, gregarious, nice guy, you know, approachable, very sweet. Like you can see with Stephen Colbert how that cult of personality built around that guy. He's very enthusiastic. And it's funny because, like, we would do the shows, and then afterwards he would exit the stage. And if you picture the set where his to audience right, where he would interview the guests, okay? So just behind that wall is where he would exit to go off to the green rooms. And just before that is where the audience would exit and turn right to go out to the street. And we would be backstage, he and I, a couple times chatting behind that wall just before you go into that door. Maybe he'd be talking to me for 5-10 minutes about whatever, just chatting. And I find out later, security would yell at me, like, if you're going to talk to Steven, go through that door, because we can't let anybody out until he's through that door. So the poor audience just sit there until I was done talking to Stephen Colbert, you know? Nice. But he's that type of guy, just very, very genuinely nice dude. And the other guys have been nothing but nice and kind, and very, you know, generous with their time as well. But I have a real affection for Stephen, having gotten to know him.
Wilmore and his show has been very interesting to me. I was, you know, he was always very funny on his Daily Show appearances.
Yeah.
You know, playing, you know, kind of outraged, as pretty much everybody is on that show, outraged about something. It's been very interesting to see. It seemed to me, I don't know if you can comment or not or care to, but it seemed to me that from the first night until even the second week, he made a lot of mental adjustments and a lot of programming adjustments that made that show snap into place a lot faster than I think anyone expected that it would. And he's really got a talent for it.
Yeah, he's very good at it. He is very good at it. And yeah, there's definitely been changes and adjustments. And I think that's just par for the course with a new show. And there's going to be a lot of new things coming up and changes. I haven't noticed a lot of change with him personally from what I've seen. Like his demeanor and his presence on camera, he's always been, you know, it's not like, I don't even think he had a really rocky start to smooth out.
No, I agree. That was what surprised me, I think.
Yeah, he's been really comfortable doing it from the get-go. But yeah, there's going to be, I think they're, you know, from the little bits I hear. Now, I'm not in the writer's room and I'm not a producer of it. I only hear what he tells the audience during his warm-up or the chatters. Yeah, you're going to see it's a growing show where you will see changes and I like that they're not locked into a format, that they don't have to do keep it 100 every night, and if there's not time for it, they don't do it, and they don't, you know, he can go have an entire half hour where, you know, he's just sitting, he and the governor, and, you know.
It's a good show. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, it's been fun. It's and I think it's going to continue to be fun.
Yeah, sometimes he may just want to keep it 13%. Who knows?
That's right.
All right, so shifting away from that, recent years we've seen a lot of comedians have expanded their audience by doing a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You are part of that group. You've
had
the movie preview review.
Yeah,
in which you talk about movies where you've seen the preview, but you haven't seen the movie yet, right?
Yeah, the movie preview review, where it's myself, a couple of our regulars, my co-hosts, and a special guest on every episode. And yeah, we review movies based on having only seen the previews. So it's a lot of rush to judgments. It's a lot of opinions. The idea for me is I want it, when you're listening to it, I want you to kind of feel like you're at a movie theater with some of your friends, you're waiting for the picture to start, and you have to sit through these previews. And everybody's kind of cracking on them, giving their opinion. It's just the difference is that right now your friends are a lot funnier than your normal friends, you know? So we have a lot of fun on it. You know, I made sure to mix it up. The people on the show have different sensibilities, and because I didn't, when I first did it years ago, it was just me and a script. I would do one movie and I would write 10 minutes worth of jokes about that movie. But to make that work and to make it funny, the movie had to be lousy, had to be easy to tear apart, because you really can't do 10 minutes of jokes tearing apart a good movie. But that had some inherent problems. A, there wasn't always a completely terrible movie for me to tear apart. And B, I didn't want to be the guy who was doing the same joke again and again. So I stopped doing it after a while, even though it had gotten very popular, and I walked away from it with the idea of I wanted to do it again someday in a different way. So then we stumbled upon this idea. So I now we can review a movie that looks great. We can review a movie that looks terrible. We do about three or four in an episode. And because I put together a team with different sensibilities, somebody at the table is going to think it looks okay. So we're never crapping on one movie, everybody, in general. That happens once in a while, but it's not a common occurrence. And it ends up with a conversation. And I treat the movie, you know, it's like I tell my guys, I said, we're not Siskel and Ebert over here. We're not real reviewers. We don't have to. And in fact, if the movie is just blah and we end up on a conversation about something else, I'm fine with that. I look at the movie, coming from a UCB background as the suggestion. You know, we're going to improv for the next 7 or 8 minutes and get into a conversation. It's going to go somewhere. And the starting point is whatever this movie is. And then whatever could be in that preview, you know, it could be something, a little scene or something, snippet. I would love to have a little act out, or just, it usually ends up in an argument, but that's the idea of it.
What has the show done for your skill set as a host and even, you know, for your other gigs? What?
I don't know, honestly. We're really new. We've just started this new season in this new way in January. We're about to post our 15th episode, and I did about 15 or 20 before that. So I don't know that it's started to pay off dividends any which way yet. Time will tell on that. We're just getting back up and running. We did a few last summer in the basement of a comedy club where we kind of tested this new idea out of how to do it and found what we liked, and then we found a permanent home. So we'll see. I'm hoping in the next couple of months that, you know, we're starting to see the numbers build again. We're starting to, you know, see that happen. And once we have a good sizable audience, I know I'll be able to go and get some really, you know, really big comedians as guests. And then we'd like to eventually be able to take it on the road, go to some podcast festivals, or do a thing where because two of the three other people at the table with me are comedians. So do a thing where we may go off to some club, do a live record in front of an audience on a Thursday night, and then I'll stay, do the club on Friday and Saturday with those two guys opening for me and stuff like that. So we have some plans down the road, and we'll see how it plays out. But we're having fun doing it right now.
You might want to have this guy Bartini on the show. He's not bad.
I've heard good things.
Yeah. And so
I have my wife on the show. She's one of the core four. She's Jessica. She's the only one who's not a stand up, but she's really funny. She holds her own. And I wanted to have a woman on there because I needed somebody, you know, to balance us out. We're going to be talking about chick flicks every once in a while. And her taste in movies is definitely different than ours. But the other two guys on the show are much more into nerd culture than me, much more into superhero movies than me. And so they can gang up on me every once in a while. And she's kind of got my back on those. And you know, it is. It's a lot of fun. We really enjoy doing it. I'm looking forward to doing it tonight, actually. We're recording two more episodes tonight.
So I was going to ask you who the other two guys are. And then you mentioned your wife before mentioning them.
Yeah.
So are you not mentioning them by name for competitive reasons, trying to keep them down?
No. Their names are Adam Lash and Jay Schmidt. Adam Lash is a guy, he used to be – he was an intern at The Daily Show. And then he worked as an assistant or so I don't know what the hell you call it. But, you know, for another comedian, and I was working on a project, and we just started – you know, hanging out a bit. And Adam has been a guy who's worked on things with me in various formats for the last few years. So he's the producer on the show. He's the one who's in charge of finding the movies. That's the other thing. Nobody at the table knows what preview we're about to see until we see it. Only Adam. He finds them. And that way it's a legitimate improv, you know. so Adam, and he's funny, and he's just a good producer, and he does a good job. Jessica, my wife, I've already told you about her, and Jay is he's a younger comic. He's only been doing stand-up a couple of years, but he's a guy I met through the Upright Citizens Brigade, and we were taking classes together. We just kind of hit it off. We have a good, you know, yeah. I like his sense of humor, and we do well together. So, I pretty much, as soon as I met that guy, I was like, yeah, I want to work with him in some form.
Well, I want to get to your comedy album in a second. But before we do that, I got to ask you about what's behind you, because now the audience can't,
see the background?
Yeah, the audience can't quite see it at the top, but it there are gold letters that say "I do," and then below that is a little. There we go. And then below that is a sign that says "Love," and then there's the famous soldier kissing the woman on. I never remember if that's VE Day or VJ Day from World War II.
But, August 14th, 1945, it says. So that was – Victory
– was it Europe or Japan Day? I can never
remember. I think it was Europe, yeah.
So tell me about this wall. It's obviously a theme, and I'm guessing your wife may have put it together, but maybe
– Yeah,
maybe
my wife definitely put it together. That's more hers. That's – let me see. The "I do" – yeah, those were letters that were around our wedding cake on the table, and the kissing the war goodbye, I think, was one of the first things we bought together when we started living together, and then the clock. It's kind of, I guess, mostly our wedding theme from what I'm seeing. There's a baby picture of me, and she's got a black and white of the Trade Center, and just some kind of stuff. The other things, then, if you were to see the rest of the apartment, is more, it's more my stuff. Like, we got guitars hanging, and I got a bunch of, like, some of my comedy albums hanging, and some prints and things like that. This wall behind me doesn't show off exactly what a boy's apartment it really looks like. She tells me quite often, you know, when I bring new things in.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Actually, I'll show you one cool thing.
Yeah, please.
That we have up here, because we haven't gotten to it. I don't know if you will, but I did a thing where I led a campaign for a few years to get a street named after George Carlin in New York, and we got it done. So there's a street sign hanging on 121st Street, and the city printed another one for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's above our door right there. So that I only just got that a couple of days ago, actually.
And I also saw the Born to Run cover.
Yeah, that's an autographed Bruce, and then that's the Who right above it, signed artwork by John Entwistle. And
nice.
Yeah, we got some fun stuff in here. The Born to Run, actually, there's a story not behind that album so much, but when I first, you know, when I told you how I had to have John Stewart had to give me, you know, I was auditioning for John Stewart.
Right.
Being a fan of the show, one thing that I knew about John that I thought would maybe help was John is a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, as am I, and if John Stewart only knew that we're both, like, we have a lot of similarities, we would get along, you know. So when it came time to do the warm-up, I have to bring him out is the last part. They give me the wrap it up sign, and then it's time to bring John out and you introduce him to the audience. So what I did is I brought him out with the Clarence Clemens style intro, which is Bruce would do this whole ramp it up with this whole, do I have to say his name? And they cheer. Do I have to speak his name? Coming from the streets of New Jersey, da, 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 da. And it worked. I mean, the audience goes freaking crazy because they know John's about to come in. I'm doing this big Clarence Clemens intro, and the audience is going nuts. And little did I know that when John Stewart comes out, the house DJ, for lack of a better term, he kicks in with Born to Run, the opening strain. So I do the Bruce Springsteen intro. Born to Run comes out. John Stewart comes out. And I knew from that second I had the job, because he has to cross. He enters where the guests enter, and he has to walk all the way downstage or upstage and shake my hand and take the thing. And he never broke eye contact, and he just kept mouthing, wow. So I knew I had it. So I would do it every once in a while. I wouldn't do it every time, but I would do the Clarence Clemens intro for John every once in a while. And then Clarence dies, and it was sad, and I stopped doing it. And I think he died in June or so, and about five, six months passed, and I'm walking to work one day, and it's December, and it's I think it may have been one of the last episodes of the season, and it was kind of cold, and I just thought to myself, you know what, it's been a respectable amount of time. I think I'm gonna do the Clarence Clemons intro for John tonight. Nice little surprise, and you know, end of the season and all that. So I'm walking in, and all right, I'm gonna do it today. I'm there, I'm ready to go. I get the word from the stage manager, you're on. So I have to enter the studio, walk down this hall, and bounce out there. As I enter the studio, I'm stopped, and this is the first time it's ever happened. The audience coordinator stops me in my tracks, and she says, "Hey," right before you go out there, she says, "Hey, just a heads up, Bruce Springsteen's in the front row tonight."
Sorry, that's yeah. Funny.
Yeah, it was. So she goes, "So don't point him out, but don't get thrown." You know, which thank God she said it in that moment, because then I didn't have 10 minutes to stew. I was just, "Oh, okay, awesome." So I go out there, and sure enough, there he is. He's sitting with his son. He's just like you would want him to be, like in a black leather motorcycle jacket, and he looked like he just sitting there with his arms crossed, smiling. He looked like a Madame Tussauds statue of himself. It was surreal, and he's right there. And my first thing is I get everybody cheering. I get everybody standing up. Everybody stand up. And everybody stands up in the room but Bruce, like he's too cool for school. And I just looked at him with this, "Come on, buddy." And I gave him one of these. "Come on, come on." And he stood and cheered, and he got into it. And then I did 15 minutes. And if you think I wasn't looking out of the corner of my eye to make sure he was laughing at every joke, you're crazy. But
that's funny.
Yeah, that was the second half to the Bruce Springsteen story. That's one of my favorite memories in all of showbiz, that I got to actually do 15 minutes for Bruce and make him laugh consistently. And then that was – yeah, that was awesome.
Well, so I got to ask you, I'm from Jersey. Uh-huh. I know John, is from Highland Park, New Jersey.
Yeah.
I think because I grew up 5 minutes from there.
Okay.
You sound and look like a Jersey guy. Are you from Jersey?
No, I'm from Western Massachusetts, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Poor bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Jersey, but with trees and no pollution. And
class and no mafia and all that stuff. Yeah, okay. All right, well, I had to take a shot at it. So, all right, so tell me about, before we wrap up, tell me about your new album, the Unintentionally White Album.
That is true, the Unintentionally White Album. It's my second stand-up album. We recorded it actually back home in the Berkshires last summer. We recorded a television special. It was the plan. We basically filled a black box theater three times over in one night, and I did three shows in the course of about 5 hours. Adam Lash opened for me and warmed the crowd up, and we had three cameras set, and you know, everything was perfect. Rented this big spotlight and had great shows, and the idea was that, you know, you tape three shows, you're guaranteed to get one good one, and you got two others for parts if you need editing and cutaways and stuff like that. But what happened was the cameraman that we hired, who I'd worked with once before and had done a great job, he was an idiot. It was just there's no way around it. He was an absolute zero of a human being. And he only set one of the three cameras up for the spotlight, and the two main cameras that were on me, he never set for the spotlight. So what happened was, here was the effect. Here's what I looked like that on everything. And with that, you are whited out, which is one of the only things you can't fix in video editing. If there's no pixels to begin with, they can't do anything of it. And the thing was that this guy, he had three shows. He didn't check his work in between the other two shows. So he never fixed the camera. He never checked his work. So he didn't even see after the first one and catch his mistake. So he had three shows where the two main cameras were just unusable. And then to top it all off, now if I was him and I realized I made this huge mistake that just ruined your night and cost you thousands of dollars, I would be terribly apologetic. What can I do? How can I help? He went 180 degrees in the opposite direction, became an abhorrent human being. I had to chase him down just to get the files that I paid for. I had to threaten to sue him. I had to turn my manager over. He ended up just – I never wanted to have kids, but I kind of want to have a son now just because now I know somebody I can point out of this is what a man should not be. Look at this person and grow up to be unlike him. So we had to sue him almost just to get the audio files. So, but the thing was that the show was so great. It was such, you know, I'm not just saying the material was great, whatever. The audience was great. I was home. It was one of those high points of my career. You know, it's right up there with performing for Bruce Springsteen. And when I look back on the top five nights of my career, this is one of them. And it was such a great night. I'm like, I've got to put it out some way. So it couldn't go out as a TV special. We lost, you know, whatever thousands of dollars we could have sold it to, whatever. All the money spent on cameras and lights that was wasted was pissed away. But we still had the audio. So we decided, I decided, well, I'm not going to go start from scratch and shoot another special. I want this night to go out there. So we took the audio from from the files and, you know, we put it together and we put together the show. And what you'll see, and the reason the title of the album is because it originally been in, you know, our intention was a full color TV special. So the cover instead is it's a white cover with just a bars of a like film strip, like movie strips, with like five shots of his work where I look like this and I'm all whited out. So we had intended on a full color TV special. What you got is the Unintentionally White album. And it's available at kevinbartini.com and at Amazon and iTunes. I'm ridiculously proud of it. I'm really happy with how it turned out with that night. It sucks that it won't be a TV special, but look, there's a long precedence of comedians doing comedy albums, and I'm happy to be a part of that. So I hope people check it out and enjoy it.
Excellent. And it makes a great story.
Yeah, right? It does. And that's the one thing, like, finally, the lemons from lemonades, lemonade from lemons, whatever it is I can trash this guy on every interview and talk about what a terrible idiot he is and the hell with him because I...
You want to give out his cell phone number? Never mind.
Sean Bukowski, I'll give out his name.
Oh, my God.
I'll let him sue me. I'll sue him. I'll countersue the bastard.
All right.
I hope nobody ever hires him. I told him. I says, you better learn to wash dishes or something because your days as a videographer are done.
All right. Well, folks, on that note, you can imagine watching comedian Kevin Bartini warming up the audience at Comedy Central's The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore, or you can actually order his comedy album, which we were just discussing, the Unintentionally White album. It's available, as he mentioned, from great retailers everywhere, or you can get it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching on MrMedia.com, either to the left or to the right underneath the video, you'll see the cover of the album. Click on it right now. You can download it, have it in seconds. I imagine it's available physically as well. That might take 30 minutes, you know, with their drone service. Kevin, website is kevinbartini.com? Mm-hmm.
Yep, kevinbartini.com, exactly.
Like martini, but with a B.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, we're working on getting every comedy club in the country eventually to serve the Kevin Bartini martini. You know, it just makes sense. They've got the Drew Carey sandwich and the Eddie Murphy side of fries. Why not the Kevin Bartini martini? So
what would the secret ingredient in the Kevin Bartini martini be?
Quite delicious, actually. Somebody made it. Well, what's it got? It's because I'm Italian. It's vodka, and it's hit with some Sambuca, and then there's and then instead of a coffee bean, they float. Kahlua along the bottom. So there's two layers. There's a dark layer and the see-through layer. And that way also, because like me, the last hit is kind of sweet. That's the idea.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Right? So comedy club owners, give that recipe to your bartenders. Get ready. Kevin Martini's coming your way. And Kevin, Twitter, Facebook, you're in all those places, I assume?
Yeah, everything is just, you know, I've kind of got on and stole Kevin Bartini for everything. So you can find me at Twitter at Kevin Bartini, Facebook. You know, I'm a junior, so I beat my dad to everything. You know?
Very good.
Yeah, but the one thing is just go to kevinbartini.com, and from there there's links to the podcast, the album, the Twitter, the everything right there.
All right. Well, Kevin,
one-stop shop.
Kevin Bartini, thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
to believer. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.
Well, it just had the opposite effect. It's like saying, don't picture a pink elephant. I just want to pick my nose.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com. The George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Shirok guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, the reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lowell Meltzer crying about the O's again.
Whew, close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
And what you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.